Good morning. Thanks for joining us. I'm joined, of course, by Chris Sertz, our Finance Director, and the two of us will review with you our full year results ending March 31, 2014. We'll follow the usual order. Chris will take through a detailed run through the numbers, provide some commentary on the divisions, and then we'll open it up to your questions. Before I hand over to Chris, I just wanted to touch on kind of the overarching messages from this morning. So the first is that trading is in line with expectations. That is to say, in line with our last update and consistent with the plan that we outlined for you at our Capital Markets Day in detail in January, excluding the weather that happened subsequently. And that reservation on the weather is just consistent with what you've heard across our sector and across industry generally in North America. So the story is unchanged from January. We have four divisions that turned in satisfactory performance, and we have the student division who's had to accelerate their recovery program because of their inability to cover off all the inflation they've been facing in their existing contracts. We are maintaining our disciplined capital program to bring back our two big bus companies, UK Bus and Student, and we're also employing more resources to further the transformation of Greyhound, especially in the commercial area, so we can create a more dynamic commercial model in the way that Dave Leitch talked to you when he was here. With regard to the board's consideration of the payment of a dividend, final year dividend, which was discussed at the time of the rights issue, the board has decided that taking together the stage of the recovery plan, as well as our commitment to the capital plan, that it is really too soon to reinstate a dividend. We're also announcing today the addition of three new non-executive directors. They bring real experience, diversity, and energy that's going to help our new chairman, John McFarland, and the whole management team deliver this turnaround of the company. So they are Drummond Hall. Drummond Hall is the current senior independent director at WH Smith. He is also a non-executive director at the Sage Group PLC. He is a former chairman at Mitchells & Butlers, so he brings vast experience, particularly major PLC experience, to FirstGroup, and he will take the role of senior independent director. We're also adding Imelda Walsh. Imelda also has extensive NED experience, but she also has great HR experience, particularly as a remuneration committee chair, and that is a position she will take at FirstGroup. Imelda, of course, her executive experience goes back to being part of the team that turned around Sainsbury's, and those skills will be of immense value, obviously, to a company with almost 120,000 employees. And finally, we're adding Warwick Brady, who is the COO of easyJet. He, of course, is a part of that top team that has enjoyed such success in turning around that company. I know many of you cover easyJet, so you'll recognize that Warwick's transportation expertise, especially as applied in entrepreneurial situations, will be of immense value to many of our companies. These new directors will be joining us at our next board meeting in June, and they will stand for election at our AGM in July. Our existing executive directors, John Sebright, David Begg, and Colin Hood, will be leaving us at that time, and I do want to recognize them and thank them for their many years of assistance and contribution to FirstGroup, and particularly in more recent years, where they've faced up to real challenges and taken the decisions that have put First on a firmer footing for going forward. So with that, I will ask Chris to take you through the numbers.
Thanks, Tim. Just bounce this forward. So, as well as taking you through the key financial themes and giving you some color on the numbers, I will also cover the financial position of the group and how it's strengthened during the year. And of course, I'll do that in the context of our medium-term objectives, which, as Tim said, have not changed. So first of all, on profit, clearly there is still much to do in executing the plans that we set out in January at the Capital Markets Day. But we are encouraged by the results for the year, with profit at £268 million, an increase of 5.5%, and at the PBT level, that's an increase of 23%. On cash, we ended the year at the upper end of our range of expectations, and in addition to the positive cash flow of £27 million, we had the benefit of the rights issue, which has clearly strengthened the balance sheet. A net debt at the end of March was 2.2 times EBITDA, compared with 3.4 times at March the previous year. And as intended, with the strengthened balance sheet, we've increased the rate of investment in the business. If I exclude rail, which, as you know, is broadly self-financing, and take account of the assets that we've acquired under leases, CapEx in the year was a little below £400 million, which is an increase of £50 million over the previous year. As you know, one of our key medium-term objectives is to improve the return on capital employed from 7% in 12-13 to in the range of 10 to 12% over the medium term. In 13-14, it was 8.2%. And that included a small benefit from the strengthening of sterling throughout the year. If we look at it on a normalized basis, it was 8.0%. So just before going to the numbers in a little more detail, I would like to draw your attention to our announcement this morning that we've signed a five-year revolving credit facility for £800 million. This, together with our bond financing structure, really gives us a strong liquidity and the financial stability that is extremely helpful during a major transformation program. And I'm particularly pleased by the continued support from our relationship banks. I know some of you are here today, so thank you. And overall, the facility was oversubscribed. So now turning to the numbers in a little bit more detail. On the revenue line, overall revenue at £6.7 billion. If I exclude the impact of the bus disposals, principally London, and also the services business in transit, and also the one-off impact of the Olympics last year, underlying growth was 1.2%. On profit, I've already mentioned the growth numbers, but on margin, you can see the increase in overall margin from 3.7% to 4% during the period. And EBITDA margins are up slightly at 8.6%. The reduction in the EPS number is all due to the dilution impact of the rights issue, and retained earnings are up by 22%. Further down the chart, you can see the interest number. That is reduced because of the part-year impact of the rights issue, partly offset by the impact of notional interest associated with the new international accounting standard on pensions. It's a complex area, and there's more details on that in the appendices to your packs. At the recent pre-close in April, we set out our intention to include recurring bid costs and small property gains and losses in our operating profit rather than in exceptional items that we've done in previous years. Bid costs for the year were £21 million, a similar amount to the previous year, which we have restated. The remaining exceptional items, the £17.6 million, that principally relates to the profit on the sale of the London businesses in bus. So if we now turn to each of the divisions and look at their results and a comment on their financial outlook. So as we went into in detail at the Capital Markets Day, and as Tim mentioned earlier, other than the impact of the extreme weather conditions, margins and revenue was flat year on year. If we look at the bridge, you can see that how the business has been impacted by inflation running at higher than the indexation in our contracts that Tim referred to. And Tim will also come back to how we're doing on addressing the plans to improve that and cover that off. If you see further down the bridge, you can also see the impact of the continued focus on cost efficiencies and the $20 million incremental benefit this year, and that takes us to above the $100 million run rate that we have referred to for a period of time now. Major impact was the weather, and you can see from the bridge that the year-on-year impact was $11 million. And I remind you that the comparator is against a Sandy-affected 12/13. So therefore, against our overall expectations for the year, the weather impacted us by $25 million. So if I now look forward into 14/15, assuming no polar vortexes or major hurricanes, the incremental weather impact will be a positive $25 million. If I then look in the underlying business, although we still have a long way to go on the current bidding season, and as I say, Tim will expand on this more, we are making good progress. And as I've mentioned previously, we have modeled various outcomes. And the range of our modeling is for revenue to be flat year-on-year to -5%. If I try and put a little color on that, I would expect flat to be an optimistic outcome, and a reduction at the other end of the range of 5% to be, I would categorize it as a very cautious outcome. Clearly, it's not realistic to assume we will defend all of the business when we're putting up prices. But if we assume somewhere halfway through that 0 to 5% range, at that level, I would expect margins in 14/15 to be approximately 7.5%, i.e. flat weather adjusted. If we do end up at the more optimistic end, i.e. flat to -1%, I would then expect margins to be closer to the 8%. And again, the final comment on 14/15, I remind you, it is very much second half loaded because of the timing of the school years within students. So turning now to transit, this business continues to turn in solid performances with strong like-for-like growth of 8% and continued good margins from what is essentially a very low capital business. The margin increase year on year is mainly due to the legal claim provision in the previous year. Going forwards, I would expect a similar profile for this business with good growth and strong overall margins. Those margins may vary year on year due to the mix of the different segments, but I wouldn't expect that impact to be particularly significant. So on Greyhound, like-for-like sales were down by 0.7% in the year. And that reflects a particularly tough first quarter, and you'll remember that sales were down by 6%, followed by two essentially flat quarters, and then a positive final quarter with like-for-like sales up 2.4%. The weather did impact this business, and with Greyhound having over 1 million miles cancelled due to the weather impact, as well as additional driver and facility costs in a similar way to those experienced by students. The bridge demonstrates the impacts of the actions that we've taken so far to implement a more flexible operating model. And you can see the reduction in variable costs mitigating to a large extent the impact of the revenue reduction, as I say, which was principally in the first quarter. Our point-to-point services, of which the largest, as you know, is Greyhound Express, have continued to perform well with another year of strong growth at slightly above 10%. In Canada, trading remains particularly tough with like-for-like sales down 3.7%. And as you know, we're rationalizing this business to turn it back into a profitable operation. If I look forwards, although I do not expect it to be a smooth ride, as it is with any recovery, but as the recovery comes, that will certainly help our customers and therefore will benefit us. More importantly, as we implement our own actions with the IT transformation program, that will increasingly bear fruit as we move towards our overall 12% margin target. Turning now to bus, The headline revenue numbers are clearly distorted by the disposal of the London bus business and also the Olympics. Underlying revenue, excluding those items, was 1.8%, and that was supported by very strong volume growth at levels we have not seen for many years. In addition to strengthening the business from the development of our commercial proposition, you can also see from the bridge that we have continued with the actions to improve the cost efficiency, and you can see the contribution there against the headwinds that we had expected in both fuel costs and pension costs. Looking forwards, despite this good progress, there is still an awful lot to do, and as we have said previously, the benefits of our actions will accelerate over time. This is in part due to the need to wait to the anniversary dates for fare increases, and we can put fares up in line with what is normal for the sector. I would expect this impact even in 14-15, with the second half performance being very much stronger than the first. And in rail, another strong performance with passenger revenue growth of approximately 6%. And this was also underpinned by continued very good volume growth. In addition to Great Western now being back on a commercial basis, the results also include the contribution from some specific fleet and infrastructure projects. And going forwards, franchise changes aside, I would expect this level of financial performance to be maintained. If I now turn to the cash flow and the balance sheet, this shows the cash flow for the year, clearly excluding the rights issue. I will come back to CapEx in a few moments, but interest, tax, pensions, and provisions are all broadly in line with the flows that you saw last year, with the disposals relating to London. The working capital outflow mainly relates to the phasing out of a prepaid discount program that we had within student, partly offset by some positive cash flows within rail. I also remind you on cash that our phasing of cash flows and therefore cash balances at particular period ends is very much dependent upon the student business, and therefore it does fluctuate significantly throughout the year. Going forwards, as I have said previously, cash flow is expected to be broadly neutral in 14-15 and 15-16, excluding dividends and clearly the impact of any franchise changes. The exact outcome will very much depend upon the capital requirements resulting from where we land in the student bidding season. In planning our liquidity headroom, we take a prudent view. For example, we plan for the event that there will be a season ticket outflow should our franchises not be renewed. No hidden messages there, that's just the way we plan. On CapEx, as we've talked about previously, the vast majority of our CapEx goes on the fleet. We have been increasing the overall investment. Our aim going forwards is to invest at the rate of 1.2 times depreciation. Over the last year or so, we've actually been investing at a slightly higher rate than that, as we've made up for underinvestment in earlier years. The other key area of investment is in facilities and equipment, as we ensure we focus on maximizing operating efficiency. We're also investing in IT systems as we bring them up to date, as well as improve our data analysis and a real focus on smart ticketing and fare management systems. On capital structure, I covered most of this in my opening comments, so I will just highlight a couple of things. I am pleased, very pleased, with the strengthening of the group during the year. Clearly, the rights issue had a major impact, but also the revolver, which I mentioned earlier, which extends our liquidity for an additional 4 years, is also clearly extremely important. We have liquidity headroom of approximately £1 billion. The other item I draw your attention to is in recent weeks, S&P affirmed our BBB- rating. They also announced at the same time that a 23% FFO to net debt ratio will be in line with investment grade rating for us, rather than the 25% target that they had previously set. This lower target results from their assessment that our business risk relative to other transportation players is low, which is due to our diversity, our strong liquidity, and our excellent competitive position. Our medium-term objectives are unchanged. I reiterate our key focus is on improving the margins, particularly in student and bus, underpinned by good growth. So in summary, clearly still an awful lot to do, but we remain very much focused on achieving these objectives and executing on the plans to get there. Thank you, Tim.
So you keep getting the same message from us. The plan's unchanged from what we laid out in January. So I thought I should use the remainder of my time to update you on those detailed presentations that each of the division heads presented in January. And we start with student, and the obvious update point concerns the weather. But I'm not going to dwell on it. I'm just going to give you some numbers you can use for comparison purposes going forward. So in this situation across our network, our school districts canceled 4,000 school days, touching 75% of our locations. This resulted in a loss of revenue that was almost four times what we normally see. This was a remarkable winter that we went through in the United States. And you see this in the results of FedEx, UPS, and so many companies that have reported. Now, we will get a good portion of that back, but we won't get it all back because there are jurisdictions like Ohio that have granted exemptions from the statutory minimum number of school days. You see the school districts doing everything they can to avoid having to put in an additional expense. So they do things like take, these teacher in service days where they teach for half a day and then the teachers are supposed to have meetings all afternoon. They turn that into a full day to get the hours. We don't make any more money, whether we pick the kids up at 12 or we pick them up at 3:30. So we continue to work with our school districts to see what, you know, how this will come out. But for planning purposes, we see getting back closer to 60% of the lost revenue that was taken from us. But it's not just the revenue. It's the cost side that hits us that we can't recover. So I was, you know, touring our locations in New York State. And one of them presents a typical story. So it's a place called Pine Bush. It's in the southern tier. So this location is squeezed between a main street and the railroad, and it barely accommodates its 160-some buses, which is a good thing because they're saving on real estate costs, but not such a good thing when you're getting slammed by storm after storm after storm. And eventually it gets to the point where there just isn't any place to put the snow. So they found themselves on too many nights having to move all the buses out of the depot, plow the lot, get them all back in there before the regular drivers arrive, have to add fuel additives so the engines will turn over and the buses will operate. And after all that work, on too many mornings at 5 or 6 in the morning, they get a phone call from the school district canceling school. A lot of costs, no revenue. And as Chris pointed out, we think this phenomenon over the course of this winter has depressed our profits by $25 million. $9 million of that 25 are these costs that I'm talking about that were completely extraordinary. But if we put aside the weather, I really want to update you on the strategy that both Linda Birtwistle, the former president, and Dennis Maple, our new president, put in front of you in January. So as you'll recall, to bring students back, we started with an efficiency program that we announced had a goal of $65 million in efficiency improvements. And as we enjoyed success with that program, we upped the goal to $100 million savings run rate, which we achieved in the past year. The difficulty is we were not seeing the margin improvement we need, and we weren't seeing it because of the problem that inflation was trumping the price indexation in too many of our contracts. So we said in January, we had to accelerate the recovery, and it is an acceleration in two respects. One, we said that the $100 million run rate that we achieved has to be increased to $150 million. And those savings come from primarily the same areas we have enjoyed success in the past. So, for example, the single biggest area we've been able to save money is the way we manage the drivers using our focused GPS system. But even with the great success we've had, we know the compliance on a daily basis fluctuates between 65 and 75% across all of our locations. Some locations not doing their fair share, not actually adopting all the best practices. So what has to happen is we need more consistent delivery. And it's the same thing in the categories of maintenance savings and the like. At the same time, our new president, Dennis Maple, has kind of stolen a march on his need to deliver more in the efficiency side. So he's reconfigured the business. He's cut further overhead, which will deliver an additional $11 million in annual savings. So he's gotten ahead of the game as we've gone forward. On the other side, the pricing, we've also said it's an acceleration because we're going to get much more aggressive going forward. Now, as I pointed out at the Capital Markets Day, this isn't an area that was lost on us. We've shed almost 10,000 buses in recent years. But it is an area where you are hesitant to just give up market share, especially in the face of an improving cost profile, hopefully an improving market. And this is a perennial balance you have to make in managing pricing in a depressed market. But last year, we decided we had to come down on the side of taking far more risk and losing buses to deal with this insidious problem of inflation coming in above the price increases in our established contracts. We're halfway through the bid season, so I want to update you on kind of the metrics as we see them. And you'll recall at the Capital Markets Day, the slide that drew everyone's attention and a few intakes of breath was the one that segmented our business, and it showed that 36% of the business was carried at less than 5% margin. So we're about halfway through the bidding season, and that 36% is now around 31%. And at this rate, it will be in the 20s by the end of the bid season. And given that not all that business was up for bid, this is fairly good progress. But what's actually encouraging about this is that that movement in percentage is primarily down to the fact that prices are sticking and not because we're shedding contracts. We have been encouraged by what's happened with our pricing so far. It has come in at the upper range of what we modeled when we were considering this kind of more aggressive approach. And I just, you know, have to caution, it is only halfway through the bid season, and some of our toughest jurisdictions like New Jersey are still in front of us. So we have to be cautious. But the actual facts are, across all of that bidding, our price increases to date on that first half of the business are just under 4%. And that compares with barely above 1% last year. So this has, been an encouraging move. We may lose more buses than we've lost in the first half, but I'm absolutely convinced that this is the right way to go to faster get to a profitable, stable business, one that can actually be a place from which we can grow long-term. And that really takes me to this last bullet that I do want to emphasize in the midst of all this change. We are not running this business down. We continue our industry-leading safety program. We are recipients for the second year in a row for recognition for safety excellence by the National Safety Council. We continue our investment in on-bus technology because we believe it gives us differentiation and a competitive advantage in many of our markets. We are continuing to push service excellence. So for the fifth year in a row now, our customer satisfaction scores have gone up because we believe if we continue to focus on a quality business, when we reach a point of stability, there will be this opportunity still in the future for a roll-up, but from a position of strength and only with contracts that provide our ability to improve returns for shareholders. Turning to First Transit, there's a fair number of points on here about improvements in the interim in transit, but it actually requires very little commentary. I mean, this is a great business. Our breadth, our size allows us to be flexible in finding growth every year, whether it's in fixed route or paratransit or shuttle or call centers or vehicle maintenance. The team continues to keep its eyes open, improving technology, you know, taking advantage of opportunities in Canada and the oil sands fields, et cetera. But the bottom line is another good year for the team. They continue to deliver, and we have every expectation they will continue to deliver. Greyhound. Greyhound is celebrating its 100th anniversary this year, and luckily they approached that milestone, as Chris already described, in an environment where there's an improving conditions for traditional Greyhound. And while we continue to enjoy this 10-plus percent growth, profitable growth, in Greyhound Express and Bolt Bus in the point-to-point business. But the update from the Capital Markets Day obviously concerns Dave Leach's description to you of how we're transitioning traditional Greyhound to the business model that we've enjoyed such success with in Bolt Bus and Greyhound Express. And as explained, that requires quite investment in systems. And I can update you that fortunately that investment is starting to manifest itself in tools that are being made available to the market. So one example is we have developed a mobile web presence that has transformed the way we're able to sell tickets via the internet. You know, our internet site in Greyhound was very clunky if you tried to access it from a mobile device. And we knew that because 30% of our contacts on the internet were from a mobile device, but fewer than 5% of tickets were sold that way. So we created a mobile web presence, and it has had immediate effect. Internet ticket sales on Greyhound are at 51% of total sales, and mobile ticket sales have already, in just a few months, become 20% of that total and are growing very quickly. So this is the sort of thing that allows you to, you know, have real presence with the market you're trying to appeal to and to be able to sell to them via the devices they want to use. The developments coming down the pipeline are really in two categories. One is that it has to do with the development of a mobile app. We have an app in use now and testing on Bolt Bus. We use Bolt Bus as kind of our laboratory. And we are going to add functionality to that. It's already in commercial use right now, but we need to add a bus locator as well as the ability to choose a particular seat on a bus. And those will be rolled out over the coming year. The same time, the big development is the introduction of airline-style pricing across Greyhound. Dave Leach spent a fair amount of time taking you through that and why that's going to be so powerful in this business. But it does require systems. It requires people. It requires real experience. And we are, though in testing this year on a local basis, largely manually, a deployment of such a system across our network is another year away at least. But it is our primary point of focus. What all this means is, of course, that Greyhound has a lot to celebrate over its 100-year history, but in approaching these celebrations, which are taking place across their system nationwide this year, they're really going to be focused on this big transformation that's occurred, this recovery of this iconic brand, and the very bright future that they have. UK Bus, updating you there. The very positive news, I think, particularly from a volume growth perspective, that Giles Fernley took you through in January has held. The growth numbers that Giles presented in some of our major markets have all held, in many cases, gotten a bit better. As Chris explained to you, the 2.6% volume growth is quite an accomplishment, especially when you consider the comparable figure last year was more like a minus 1%. And here's what's really important about this progress. That improvement is almost all coming from an increase in fare-paying passengers, not concessions or anything like this, fare-paying passengers. This is the first time in a decade that category has grown on first group. So it is really a very positive sign. Now, you don't achieve that kind of progress without people, without the right structure, and Giles will make sure he has both. So of the top 30 managers, half of them are new to their posts, and almost all of them come from outside recruitment. Of total management, 35% are new to their posts. Giles has just recently completed the removal of the old regional structure where control was from far above and gone to local MDs who are responsible for all elements of their local bus company. Most importantly, those local commercial decisions that make it possible to exploit possibilities on one route versus another. At the same time, Giles is really focused on the efficiency and the quality of service delivery across the network. These are some pretty big eye-popping numbers. Breakdowns in buses are down 27%. Lost mileage is down 21%. They continue to focus on the quality of service that they are delivering to the market. You know, I'm very, very proud of what Giles has done. You know, he's continued his investment in the fleet, and he's even thought comprehensively because as he invests in this fleet, he's consistently reduced the number of vehicle types we use. So vehicle types are down 10% in this past year. We will see similar progress in the year we're in because he wants to eliminate variability. He wants to eliminate inventory. He wants to eliminate waste. He's using every lever he can to make sure we get to a more dynamic position. And I am impressed by what the team has done because it has followed a very specific schedule exactly as predicted. So when Giles came in, he said, you've got to start with the reimposition of disciplined delivery. People have to know that bus is going to be there on a regular basis so you become part of their routine. Then we're going to have to completely recast the commercial offer, and it's only then we're going to start to see this volume recovery, and we have. Now, admittedly, the payoff to all this is revenue increase, but we're going to be very disciplined. We're not going to give up the progress we've made to date, and as Chris already mentioned, we'll be only moving those prices up with the market, but we're now in a position we think we can, and we think this really shows itself and as we hit these anniversary dates, particularly in the second half, such that I'm very confident in our goals in UK bus for the year. Finally, UK rail. UK rail remains a source of real strength for us. We've had robust passenger growth in every one of our talks. And we've really shown our management capability in the way we dealt with the challenge of weather in this country. You know, we had a railway drop into the sea. We had flooding on a scale not seen before by us as a result of, you know, tidal surges, and we had rivers and streams overflowing their banks. And most damaging, which people really didn't realize, was just groundwater percolation. It was most damaging because there was just nowhere for that water to go for a very, very long time. It's very tough to run a railway signaling system when you have that level of water on the ground. But our team coped with it with workarounds, you know, with arranging alternate transport and with providing useful customer information that resulted in our getting plaudits from our major stakeholders and our customers. I mean, I, you know, toured through that whole area in Exeter and other places, and just the spirit of the people, including the customers, at these transfer points where we're moving people onto buses was really something to see. The team really did a great job. And I do want to single out for praise the Network Rail and our partnership with Network Rail on Great Western. They really did a fantastic job, and I think the teams came together in just the way you want to see. As far as rail refranchising goes, we're finally at a point where decisions will start to be made. As they are made, this huge volume of noise and speculation, you know, all I can say is we continue to believe what we've always believed. We have a lot of value to deliver in rail, and we're convinced that as we go through this franchising process over time, we will definitely find our place in the market. We are right now, you know, just busily working on what will be a very compelling bid for the East Coast franchise. So let me just conclude by saying that we are delivering in line with our expectations. that all of the businesses are very clear about their priorities and their deliverables and what their responsibilities are, and making sure that we improve profitability, improve cash flow, and ultimately put all of these businesses in a position to deliver sustainable growth. I think we've been, you know, the only real material change that's happened since January is the one Chris reported on, and that is that the company is in a much stronger financial position right now from which we can deliver these plans. We're very, very fortunate that we were joined by John McFarlane as the chairman, and we're fortunate with these new directors who are joining us, and I'm convinced that as we pull together and move forward, we're in a better position to deliver the plan, and with that, I will happily open up to your questions.
I think we have a mic somewhere, so if you just wait for the mic.
Damien Brewer from Damien Brewer from RBC. Three questions, please. First of all, on the rail side, your current First Capital Connect contract runs out in September. How much time will you or a new operator need to mobilize for the new contract? And therefore, how much time does the DfT have left to actually make a decision on that? And if we get past that, what happens? Secondly, on the bus side, passed through it, but you invested significantly in ticketing technology. Could you give us a little bit more detailed update on where you are on that, how many pilots are going, and what that's doing in terms of your, if you like, your sort of CRM data, and what you can do with that to develop the UK bus business further? And then very finally on the school bus, pricing up 4%, you said. Could you give us some feel of what the capital intensity of the new contracts look like? Does it all still require new buses, or have you been able to make headroom in terms of recycling existing fleet to improve the return on capital that way? Thank you.
Okay, on rail FCC, one of the reasons why the amount of money we talk about that goes into rail bidding doesn't drop off now that we're, you know, just really focused on the East Coast bid is we do spend money on preparing for mobilization. I mean, you can't take the risk of not preparing yourself. And so, you know, we're kind of going through that now, actually. We expect a decision in the very near term on the TSGN, the Thames Link contract, and so we'll have till, whoever the winner is, we'll have till September, and we don't see any reason why that schedule won't be followed. You're right, I didn't mention the ticketing. I talked a lot about the developments in Greyhound, and it's the similar learnings are being applied in UK bus. This is a one where it's kind of under promise and over deliver, but I'm quite confident that you will see an acceleration in the delivery of smart ticketing products this year in First Group. We've made some important changes that kind of stay tuned. I'm quite confident where we are. I think we've got some new resources that are going to be very important for us as we go forward. And on the capital intensity in student, the 4% I was talking about, of course, is an existing business. So that update really doesn't concern a difference in the capital intensity. I think the important point, though, Damien, is this, that number is really good news long term. But it does mean that the capital needs of the business, and Chris alluded to this, will not contract as much as they might have, which is an element we raised with you in January as the balancing item should we lose contracts. So that's a good news item long term because it means we get to a healthy business, and I would take that trade-off in a minute. But it does mean that the capital needs will not shrink as much as they otherwise would have.
I mean, I'd just add, I'd expect the average age of our fleet and student to be broadly similar at the end of this year to previous years.
Hello, it's Joe Thomas from HSBC. Just on the divvy, can you just explain what has actually changed here? I mean, you've been talking about strength, and so why you subsequently found the need to pass it, and when it might be reinstated, what we ought to be looking for there for a position where you can pay a dividend again. And then just on student, did I take it from your comments that you're now looking for $160 million of cost savings, given the additional $11 million that's been found there? And I suppose sort of allied to that, but in terms of underlying cost inflation, you said that pricing is running at plus 4%. What's happening to costs there?
Okay, first on the dividend, you know, back at the time of the rights issue, you know, we did say that it would be subject to performance in line with expectations at the time. And though our performance is in line with, overall with what we were looking for, the facts are that student has been slower and the other divisions have made up for that performance. And given that student is our biggest business, and in line with the obviously the opinions of our new chairman, the board took the position that the more prudent thing right now to do is to keep that cash in the business. And this is something, you know, when you think about it, we're going to have three new board members. We'll be under constant review going forward. And the dividend is a communication to the shareholders as well as a payout. And so I'm sure over time they will review this and we would keep you posted. But I wouldn't want to get ahead of their further deliberation on that. As far as the savings of students, no, the 11 is part of the 50. It isn't an additional. It was Dennis trying to get ahead of the game to make sure he was going to be able to make that improvement. What was the third?
Yeah, the third one was just what's happening on costs. Again, we've talked about part of the reason for the state we're in at the moment is inflation going ahead of the inflators. It will take us 3 years to run through the whole portfolio. As we've talked about, we're halfway through the first year at the moment. And that's why, if you remember back to the bridge that Linda put up at the Capital Markets Day, we had the benefit of efficiencies, we had the benefit of pricing, but there was also a minus 0.5%, which was reflective of the fact that still for those contracts that are not yet up for renewal, there will be cost inflation ahead of the inflators in the contracts.
But the actual comparison, though, if that's what you're looking for, to the 4%, is inflation more like the 1.5 to 2 that we've seen in the past. We haven't seen a big pickup.
So there's no pickup in wage rates or anything that you're seeing as part of any economic recovery in the U.S.?
No.
And again, Joe, that's what in the guidance we've given you of essentially flat to slightly up margins, dependent upon the actual outcome of the bidding season. All of that is taken into account.
Morning, Jamie Robotham from Morgan Stanley. Just one clarification to understand this outlook for the top line in student bus. So, Chris, your guidance was sort of 0 to -5% on the revs, with zero a very optimistic potential outcome, you said. At the same time, Tim said on the third of the business that's under review that makes substandard margins, so far halfway through the bid season, not actually shedding that many contracts, in fact keeping them with pricing up 4%. So, in the two-thirds of the business that you're not reviewing, are the retention rates low? I think you just basically said that the pricing there is at 1.5%. So that zero doesn't actually sound so optimistic unless suddenly in the second half of the bid season you put that 4% increase to a load of other contracts and they tell you where to go. So can I just understand a bit better the dynamics?
Sure. First of all, if you look at normal retention rates in this business, it's in the 80%, up towards 90 overall. So you've got that impact of that on the top line, so that goes into account. I think the second issue is we do want to be prudent because we don't want to see basically say here, right, yes, things are going optimistically, and then as Tim said, we've got a very tough half. We've got the tougher half of the negotiations to come up with. So If things continued as they were today, we'll be towards the optimistic end of the range, but we want to be prudent going forward.
I would size it this way, and this is there's a huge health warning on this because we still have half season to go through. And New Jersey can swing so wildly because, you know, as you know, they're bid by route and very late in the season. But we're talking about, you know, we always talk about retention rates. We talk about share shifts and we talk about conversions. And, you know, we end up with about flat revenue, slightly up maybe in a typical year. So if your retention rate is normally around the 90% we've always talked about, and that's kind of been the base we moved from, how this pricing applies with regard to this category we're talking about will drive us probably to a number somewhere between 85 and 88. That's how it's looking if we continue to run at this rate, which is pretty strong when you consider what we were preparing ourselves for. Then, you know, you have to look at what happens with share shift and conversions. Conversions aren't, you know, any stronger than any other year particularly. We have had some success in share shift, but not huge, but more like a normal year. So we don't really see a seismic change. We prepared ourselves in modeling for a much more dramatic change, quite frankly. And I think that's the only thing we're able to update on so far.
Good morning. Edward Stanford from Lazarus. I was struck by a comment in the chairman's statement talking about it'll take a long time for organic cash flow to reduce levels of debt to where you want them to be, and you were considering ways to accelerate this. Could you perhaps amplify on that?
Well, of course, what his comment reflects is nothing more than the plan we've put in front of you. And it's been in front of you for a while in terms of when free cash flow really comes. And we said for the next year or so, cash will be about the way it is now. And so I think he was just merely making that observation and saying that I think, weighs heavily on him and thinking about shareholder payout. He was also signaling the fact that when we went through the rights issue, as we explained, we looked at all options and all alternatives. And he was pointing out that we chose, in his opinion, the right strategy relative to conditions and the risk-reward opportunities that are out there. But that is not a one-time exercise. That will be kept live, and he's signaling, I think, quite clearly, markets change, opportunities change, and we're going to keep asking ourselves these questions because this is undoubtedly, you know, a real challenge in front of us, and if there's anything that can accelerate the improvement of returns to shareholders, we're going to explore it.
Thanks. Gerald Koo from Liberum. A couple of questions. Firstly, on rail, can you just run us through the working capital exposure on exit for each franchise? And on school bus, where do you think the fleet size is now? And based on your sort of revenue range of 0 to -5, what's the range of outcomes in terms of fleet size?
Well, it's now around 48,000. And so, it could go down 4.
Gerald, on working capital, so First Capital Connect would be around 70 million. ScotRail, somewhat smaller than that, so that would be around 50 million. And the big one clearly is Great Western would be more around the 90 million.
I had two questions, please. Just firstly on Greyhound, can you talk a bit about the competitive dynamics there and sort of what you're seeing in sort of specific areas, if possible? And also, if you could just touch on Canada and sort of what is the loss position this year and where do you think you can get to next year and whether there was any weather impact there? And then just finally on student, I was just interested to understand what you think, why you think you were able to get that 4% price rise from the school board. I mean, is it an understanding that your contracts were uneconomic and there are no other choices, or what do you think sort of has played there? Thank you.
What was the first one? Competitive. Oh, yeah, and Greyhound. I'm sorry. I can't even read my own writing. Greyhound, especially in the point-to-point business, Greyhound Express, it's a very competitive environment, especially in certain corridors, like in the East and in the Midwest. The only point we make is that we continue to grow profitably in all of those markets, and we do that because we do have this competitive advantage, we believe. Others may dispute it, but we believe of the feed we get from the national network that makes it easier for us to create balanced flows. I've, you know, talked about this on a number of occasions when we've gone through the rollout of the Greyhound Express and Volt Bus product. And but it's quite a competitive environment, and some competitors come in to these markets, like in California right now, in Texas and other places, with a lot of free ticket offers and the like. But we just hold our position because we're sure that over time we have a good winning formula. Canada is a real challenge. Canada does obscure to a certain extent how strong our U.S. business is in Greyhound. And are we giving a number?
It's in the sort of single digits, low single digits in dollars. And our aim is clearly to turn it into positive territory.
So what are we doing about it? So we're not just going to sit here and endure this. Because Greyhound Canada does have an important role, particularly as a feeder into the U.S. So there is a real competitive issue there. We are converting as much of that to a sustainable model. So we've introduced Bolt Bus and Greyhound Express into Western Canada. We will be spreading that across. This year, we completed the rationalization of the package business. Greyhound Canada is very different from the rest of the Greyhound. 25% of the revenue comes from package delivery. We are the package delivery company in a lot of parts of Western Canada. So we have to make sure that that is, you know, a sensible, sustainable business, and we've done a lot of work this year. So we're going to continue to do, you know, what we can to bring this down to a manageable situation. And on student, why has the pricing held? Well, a couple of things. Number one, although there are still real problem areas, like some parts of Michigan, as you know, tax receipts are up back to where they were before the crisis on a state and local basis. So the going for pricing at this time, it is possible, obviously, for some people to face up to it in a way that a couple of years ago they just wouldn't have. It just was unthinkable. So that's got to be a contributor. And it is a contributor in the context of something we've talked about in a long time, which is why evergreen contracts ever existed in this business. And that is, it is a pain in the neck for school districts to change providers. I mean, remember, school transportation is just 5% of their total budget. So in the old days, what they really cared about was that they weren't getting phone calls from parents that Johnny wasn't being picked up. And if they had a good provider who was reliable, they'd just as soon stick with them. So there is a stickiness to these contracts that maybe is starting to take hold. But the other thing is, you know, this will go over time, and two things are going to push it in either direction. One is, as we keep going, school districts, you know, may react. You know, they may not be as accommodating going forward. They may prepare themselves to put out more bids. But the other is, the price leadership that's occurring might result in, you know, the market getting healthier and healthier. And these are the two dynamics we're going to have to watch over time, and we can't be sure how they'll play out. Well, if there are no further questions, I thank you for taking the time to listen to us this morning. Thank you very much.